Because we still want to fuck? Because had you not left, we would have been fucking the entire 2 months we were apart? Or because I spanked you, and that makes you feel like I have some kind of power over you? I don't. You're my boss, who wants you to be demanding and argumentative and share your opinions. If you submit to me at work, you will fail. So don't even think about holding back. Now, if you submit to me in the bedroom, it's pleasure. There's a difference. My phone buzzes and Lori shoves away from me, backing up until she's against the door. Partners meeting in 15, Maria announces. Thank you, Maria, I reply, but I never take my eyes off Lori. I wait until I'm certain Maria's disconnected the line, and then I say, you have three choices. One, quit. Two, work with me and succeed with me. Or three, tell Reese you can't work with me and give him a good reason, but before you do, keep in mind that he'll coddle you, but then he'll doubt you. Because this job isn't about being comfortable. It's about being damn good, even when you're uncomfortable. A trial is never comfortable, and a judge doesn't give a fuck about your feelings, nor does your client or opposing counsel. That has nothing to do with this, she says. This situation is not a reflection of how I'll handle a trial. Isn't it? I challenge. What if you fucked the opposing counsel 2 years before? Would you quit on your client to avoid facing him? Of course not, she bites out. Then what's it going to be? Stay with me or go to Reese? Her lips tighten. I won't fuck you again. Then you choose me? Professionally, she says. Yes. Professionally, I respect your limits, I say. But I'm not one to play games about what I want. This changes nothing. I still want to know you. I still want to fuck you, but I won't. Not until you're ready. I'll never be ready. We'll play that game until it gets too old, and it will, quickly. For now, you have your first assignment. Study my cases and know why I won. Don't come back until you can answer questions accurately on every single one of them. She studies me several beats, something flashing in her eyes before she turns and walks to the door, but when I think she will exit, she pauses and turns back to me. I won't ever be ready. You see, one night weeks back, I had this overwhelming need to go to the bar where I met you. I was compelled, and I went. I saw you there with another woman who looked a lot like me. It told me who you really are, and I don't like that person. She turns again and reaches for the door. Lori, stop, I order, closing the space between us, but not fast enough. She's already out of the door, and right when I would exit to follow, Reese steps in front of me. I curse under my breath, and he arches a brow. I give him my back and cross the room, claiming the spot behind my desk and sitting down. Reese shuts the door and crosses to sit in front of me. How big of a problem is this? Nothing I can't handle, I assure him, not big on denial. Did you fuck her? If I did, I say, I wouldn't tell you. That would be her story to tell. She's been through a lot, he says, which is why I'm going to mentor the hell out of her, whether she likes it or not. I stand up. Let's get to that partners meeting. We have the world to rule. With that statement, we shift into our own warrior mode. We exit to the outer offices, a mission between us to be achieved. Battles new and yet to be discovered, to be fought and won. While I have one battle of my own to win, and her name is Lori Havens.
Chapter 19. Lori. I leave Cole's office in a rush of heat and adrenaline, but somehow I walk calmly through the workplace and claim my desk in the middle of Cubicle City, home to dozens of people that I haven't even met beyond a passing formality. A big win for me right now is that I managed to do all of this and sit down before my knees give out. He affects me. God, how Cole affects me like no other man. No other human being has ever affected me. He was right. I do still want him, and what kind of fool wants a man who will likely be back in that bar where we met, finding someone else's ass to smack this very night? I shove that thought aside. He's my boss. This is a job. This is my future, and I will not lay down for it, in any sense of the word. I will not want that man one more second. Ever. I ignore the computer on my desk and, avoiding a learning curve, pull my far more comfortable MacBook from my briefcase. Powering it up, I waste no time Googling Cole Brooks Houston, and not for personal information. It's my duty. A long list of data pops up, including a number of pictures with him looking hot as hell, distracting me from my work mission. And fuck you, Cole Brooks, for that and more, but not literally. I start to read, and in a matter of minutes, I've finally homed in on my job and tuned out the personal junk. And it is junk. I'm absorbed in the legality of Cole's work and quickly taking notes. 2 hours later, I decide that Cole Brooks is not all talk, not in the bedroom, and not in the courtroom. He wins, and he wins when no one else would win. He's good at his job, and I can learn from him. I'm about to dive into the background of one of his earliest cases when murmurs spread through the room. Glancing up, my eyes land on Cole and Reese in obvious deep conversation as they stride down the pathway between the cubicles, headed my direction. I, like everyone else, find them a mesmerizing mix of power, confidence, and good looks. Of course, good looks and even confidence don't mix to create winning attorneys, but it's icing on the cakes of two men in their prime on top of their game. Every step they take together seems to scream unstoppable. They come nearer, and I force myself to turn away and focus on my computer, on the stories of the one man between the two of them that has consumed my world. I know the minute they're aligned with me, about to pass me, the minute Cole is on this side of me, I feel him. He stops abruptly, and I instinctively rotate my chair, my gaze colliding with his, the impact a jolt I pray no one notices. Cole glances at Reese.
I'll catch up with you later.
Even before Reese replies, Cole steps to the door of my cubicle, his big, perfect body consuming the entire tiny space.
This is where they put you permanently?
He demands. As far as I know, yes, I say.
This is unacceptable. Gather your things.
I blanch. What?
Gather your things,
he repeats, no shift in his tone.
You're not staying here.
I want to argue. I want to say that this is where I belong. All eyes will be on me because they are on him, and those people will question why I'm being treated differently than them. People will assume I'm sleeping my way to the top, but I can do nothing to stop it. Not now. Not without making it worse. Accepting my circumstances, and therefore his unbendable command, I slide my MacBook in my briefcase and stuff the files HR gave me inside with it. The minute I stand and slip my briefcase and purse on my shoulder, he says,
"Come with me,"
and doesn't wait for my agreement. He starts walking. I double step and quickly catch up. "Mr. Brooks."
"Cole,"
he corrects without looking at me. "Mr. Brooks," I say softly, reminding him that he's my boss. He stops walking and faces me, staring at me for two beats that feel like 10 with an audience before he faces the general masses.
"Can I get everyone's attention?"
he calls out. The room silences in seconds, and all of the 24 eyes in the room are on him, and now me.
"Just a quick greeting to everyone. Call me Cole, just as you call Reese Reese. I'm not here to intimidate anyone but our opposition. For those of you I might not have met, I look forward to remedying that. Beside me is Lori Havens, Merrick Scholarship recipient and third-year law student. I'm officially her mentor, and she will be an extension of me. She will act and ask for things on my behalf. Consider any direction or request she gives you as coming from me. More soon."
He gives them a two-finger wave and turns to start walking, the obvious assumption that I'm to keep pace. And I do. He doesn't speak, and neither do I. There are people on either side of us the entire walk, and more walking toward us. I don't know if what he just did is normal, or if it helps me or hurts me. I only know that I don't want to be the bimbo who slept her way to the top. That thought drives every step until we head down the hallway to the executive offices, and I begin to contemplate that I might end up acting as his secretary. This is actually fine with me if it achieves my goals, but my assumption proves wrong when just shy of the entrance to the executive suite, he stops at an empty office, flips on the light, and motions me inside.
Your new office. Make yourself comfortable.
I turn to face him. I don't want special treatment.
I don't give special treatment,
he says without missing a beat.
I also don't like my cases within the reach of masses of eyes and ears and their preparation where they might leak. My business is now your business. My cases are now your cases. You will guard them like Fort Knox. Therefore, this office is a resource to do your job. This is also the office I would give any other person I picked for your role. If you don't want that role...
I do. Of course I do. I just want to know I earned it. I really want to earn it, Cole.
And you will,
he says, his voice softening.
If I didn't believe you wouldn't be here, no matter how good, bad, or perfectly you fucked me or I fucked you. And as for that conversation in my office...
Can we just not go there? Please. He opens his mouth to no doubt reject my request when there is a shout of, Cole, from the direction of the executive offices. Cole clamps down on whatever he was going to say and looks right.
Yes, Maria?
You have the Houston office manager on the line and it's urgent.
On my way,
he says, returning his attention to me.
We aren't done with this conversation. As I said to the team, more soon, but sooner for you.
He leaves. And it's as if all the energy in the room is sucked out with him. That's how powerful his presence is. That's how much he affects me. Cole Brooks told me that he would own me. And if I'm not careful, he will. An hour after Cole leaves me in my new office, I happen to glance up as he passes my door. Happen to look up, I ask myself, or just so hyper-aware of the man that I know his every move. I glance at my computer with a news article about one of his cases on the screen. I have an excuse for the hyperfocus. It's my duty to be obsessed, and I think I really am. And so I obsess for a good 2 hours until Maria appears in my doorway. Hola, honey. You now have a complete file of every case Cole has ever taken to trial in your new company email. That's helpful, I say. Thank you. He's making you study, huh? Yes, I say. But that's good. I need to understand his formula for success and what he needs from me. She gives me a sly little smile, says nothing, and disappears. I straighten and grimace. I'm not sure what that little smile means, and I'm not sure I want to know. Cole and I have an energy about us that I am not sure is easily missed by someone sharp and smart enough to work directly with Reese Summer. As if I've called upon magic in that moment, Reese steps inside my doorway.
I'm headed to court and wanted to check in before I leave,
he says, perching on the arm of a chair.
How are things?
Good, I say. Already busy, and I like that.
How's the chemistry between you and Cole?
I don't blink with his choice of wording that tells me he knows more than I want him to, but it's not easy. He's tough, but seems to be fair. That works for me.
How do you know him?
He asks. I don't play dumb. Reese has been good to me. I won't disrespect him that way. That's his story to tell, I say, praying he doesn't tell it at all.
He said it was yours to tell.
There's nothing to tell, I counter. Really. He considers my reply for several beats.
Come to me if nothing becomes a problem.
It won't. He gives me a nod and stands before disappearing into the hallway, but this topic of me and Cole hasn't gone away. Kat will question me, and she's dogmatic about what she wants. She will push me and hard for a story I don't plan to tell. That Cole didn't tell matters to me. It's respect for my privacy that I appreciate, and in light of our workplace relationship, I owe him the same. I won't let this become a problem, I whisper. And quickly key up my new email. I need to work. I need to focus. I stand up. I need to walk. I need coffee. Actually, I never had lunch. The coffee and some pastry will be my lunch, and then I'll power through work the rest of the afternoon. I will know these cases like I know my own history. Sometimes too well. I hurry down the hallway and exit the lobby through the heavy wooden door that leads to the elevator banks. Cole is walking in my direction, and I have no choice but to walk directly to him. "I'm going to get coffee," I explain. "Do you want me to get you some?" It could seem like an offer a secretary makes, but with him, with us, it feels like more, like an intimate offer with a more intimate meaning.
"I want a lot of things,"
he says, his eyes flicking to my mouth and lifting.
"Coffee isn't one of them."
He pauses for effect, and that effect turns out to be the clenching of my sex.
"But," he adds, "I'll ride down with you. I have off-site meetings the rest of the day. We'll go through my cases tomorrow."
He punches the elevator call button. I am wet. My God, I am wet from a conversation about coffee with a man who makes a lot of women wet and then moves on to the next. I'm losing my dignity here. "I'm just going to take the stairs," I reply quickly, inspired by the stairwell sign directly to my left. It helps me think, which is true. I walk and run when I'm thinking, but right now I can't think. He's in front of me. He's consuming me. He's a womanizer and my boss. I cut left and open the door. I'm barely inside the stairwell when Cole is with me. I whirl around to face him as the door shuts behind him, sealing us inside. He advances on me and I back up, hitting the wall. "What are you doing?" His hands press on the wall on either side of me, his arms caging me in.
"Finishing our conversation from my office,"
he says, and he's not touching me, but I feel him all over and it's pissing me off. To hell with him being my boss. I fight back. "The one where I told you I knew you were a player?" I demand, my fingers curled into my palms at my sides.
"I went to that bar trying to find you, and that woman sat down with me,"
he says.
"Had you stayed around, you would have seen that I stayed all of 60 seconds and then left, alone. I didn't fuck that woman because I was too busy thinking about you, which is the definition of insanity since I didn't even know your last name."
His gaze lowers to my mouth, lingering and lifting.
"I just knew how good you tasted. Everywhere."
He leans in close, his breath a warm tickle on my neck as he says,
"I just knew I wanted more."
He pulls back to look at me.
"And I still do."
He looked for me, and he wasn't with that woman. All my good sense escapes me. I forget that he's my boss, that I might well lose my scholarship for crossing ethical lines with this man. There is only how deliciously spicy he smells, and how impossibly perfect I remember he felt that night. I want to feel him now. I want him to kiss me. I want him to fuck me right here in this stairwell. But he doesn't. He pushes off the wall and leaves.
Chapter 20. Cole. After 2 hours of off-site meetings, I return to the offices, and I've just reached the entrance of the building when a phone call from Houston stops me in my tracks. I step to the side of the door and finish the conversation I need to have now, and in private. 5 minutes later, I enter the building with the understanding that the partner voted into control of Houston, meant to be an extension of both myself and Reese, has created chaos by shuffling clients, and there's a mass exodus in effect. I cross the lobby and step onto the elevator with regrets over the structure of the Houston office within our new operation. I intend to mend it, and mend it immediately. What I don't regret is following Lori into that stairwell, especially now, knowing I'm going to have to leave town. I'd seen the look in her eyes before she headed to the door, hatred of herself for wanting a man she felt could have substituted her for any other woman burning in her stare. A man who didn't really feel she was different when I damn sure do. Add that to the fact that I'm now her boss, and I wasn't going to let her spend another minute of this day feeling what I was certain she felt, what I'd seen in her eyes. The elevator arrives on my floor, and I waste no time exiting and making my way to the executive hallway. When I reach Lori's office, her door is open and I stop, catch her attention and motion for her to follow me. I pause and wait for her at the glass doors. "I have a crisis in Texas," I say, "an uprising against the senior VP I left in charge." I open the door for her. She quickly enters and I follow to find Maria behind her desk, her attention on us. I need a private jet that can get me to Houston tonight and back by the party on Saturday night, and I need to talk to Reese the minute he's out of court. Got it, she says. On it all. I motion Lori to follow me to my office. I need you to find me a secretary by Monday, I say. Interview. Make a hire. Just get them at the desk, ready to work. Make sure they have a backbone and skills. She enters the office. I join her and shut the door. You're going to trust me to actually hire for you? She asks. And a whole lot more. I promise her as Maria blasts over the intercom. Reese is on the line. He's on break, so he has about 60 seconds. Thanks, Maria, I say. Walking around my desk, I sit down and grab the line while Lori moves to sit in one of the two seats directly in front of me. Reese, I say, confirming I'm talking to him, considering the sensitivity of the topic. Why do I know this is a problem? There is a revolt against Newton. Newton? Everyone voted him in. He's good. Apparently, he's a secret Napoleon. You know how power goes to some people's heads. Bottom line here, I need to go and stop a mass exodus, and then this plan we had to keep the offices divided for success needs to be trashed. He curses under his breath. Where does this leave us? Do you want to pull all management into this office? You have court right now, I say. Focus on your client. I've got this. Let's talk once I evaluate. How confident are you that you can fix this? He asks. Completely. The way I see it, Newton did us a favor. The sooner he fucked up, the better. I'm still rooted in that world with those people. Right. You're right there. We have the open house Saturday night, though. Everyone who is anyone will be there. I have a private plane booked, I say. I'll fly back late tomorrow night. You just go win your case, even if it costs me that bet. I'll call you. I hang up and refocus on Lori. What can I do to help? She asks. There's an open house here Saturday night. In attendance will be clients and potential clients, political figures, a few judges, as well as a clusterfuck of press and then some. You'll need to be at the party. That didn't tell me how I can help, but that aside, do you really think you can handle what sounds like a massive problem and be back here tomorrow night? If I have to go back Monday, I will, but if I do, I will not be pleased. I didn't move here to have to be there all the damn time. She straightens. That brings me back to, what do you need me to do? Tell me how to help. Her. I need her. Personally, and right now, professionally. Her readiness, her directness, her intelligence. There are two stacks of files in the conference table behind you, I say. It'll be easier on you if you just settle here in my office and study them. The first stack are potential cases. You're skipping the quiz on my cases and applying what you learned to the candidates who want to become clients. Pick the top two based on your study today. The second stack of files are the people who will be here Saturday night. You're going to need to brief me on who they are before we attend the party. I reach into my pocket and slide my phone across the desk, allowing her access to my phone that is not filled with random women's numbers. I'll need your number for easier access. She looks at me a beat, understanding flickering in her eyes. I wouldn't hand my phone to just anyone. I want her to trust me. I'm giving her mine. Of course, she says softly, swallowing hard and picking up my phone, and while I have professional motives, there is a sense of intimacy between us that would not be there with someone else. While she keys in her contact information, I pack up my briefcase and stand, rounding the desk. By the time I'm on the other side, Lori is on her feet, brushing her long brown hair from her face and offering me back my phone. I set my briefcase on the chair and reach for the device, my fingers brushing hers as I accept it, the instant charge between us fierce enough that she sucks in air and presses her lips together. Lips that need to be on my lips and on my body. I slide my phone into my pocket. What else do you need me to handle? She asks. And what else do I need to know? Cocktail attire Saturday night, I say. Her eyes go wide. Right, about that. You really want me at the party? I'm an intern. The idea is to turn you into the next powerhouse, and you'll be ours and mine. Not your one-night stand? And there's the answer to a question in my mind. Have I convinced her that she is all that has been on my mind for months now? The answer is no. I step closer. I never wanted you to be a one-night stand. I looked for you. Now I found you. The question is, are you going to be here when I get back? Since discovering you're my boss, I've considered my options. Reese came to me. I narrow my eyes on her. And? He asked me about us, in a discreet fashion, of course. What did you tell him? I ask. That there is nothing to tell, but he made it clear I could go to him. I could also ask for a transfer with the consortium, but I risk months of delay, and they say the devil you know is the devil to know. Or, that's my version, since I really don't know you. I don't know what devil I get if I leave here. And you were right, anyway. I'd look like the attorney who can't handle a problem, and I can. Is that what I am now? A problem? Trouble? I told you that. I was right when I said it, but I spent hours today studying your work. You're a damn good attorney, and I like what you and Reese stand for. You make money, a lot of money, but you don't do it just for the money. I want to stay, and I want to work for you and learn from you.
To be clear, Lori, I'm damn lucky to have you on my team. I know your track record as well.
Then when you get back, Cole, we have to talk about limits and rules.
Maria buzzes in.
Cole, your plane will be ready and waiting in an hour. The pilot can fly you back tomorrow night or Saturday.
Thank you, Maria, I say. And the minute she disconnects, I say, fuck it, and do what I've wanted to do since the last time I saw this woman. I drag Lori to me, mold all her soft curves to every hard part of me, and close my mouth over hers. Her hand is pressed to my chest, elbow stiff, but the minute my tongue strokes hers, her elbow softens, and a soft, sexy sound escapes her lips that has me ready to shove her against the desk and pull her skirt up and finally be inside her again. But I can't. Not now. Not with me leaving town. That, I say, tearing my mouth from hers, was in case those rules include no kissing. And damn, woman, you taste and feel too good not to kiss. I brush my lips over hers again. But if that's what you decide, if that's what you want, I'll follow your rules. I release her and grab my bag, walking toward the door before I end up kissing her again.
Cole, she calls out just before I exit. I turn back to look at her and she opens her mouth to say something, but seems to change her mind. Good luck.
Thanks, sweetheart. I'll call you later.
I leave then with the taste of her on my lips and a vow that I will respect her rules. After, of course, I state my opposing opinion and deliver my most persuasive closing statement.
Chapter 21. Lori. I watch Cole disappear through the open doorway, the feel of his hands lingering on my body, the taste of him on my lips, and oh God, he tastes good. He tastes like the answer to everything I have ever wanted wrapped in one package. A dream job, a dream man who even says that he will follow my rules. This should please me. It does please me. I meant everything I said to him. Staying is my best option, but there have to be rules. I can't be the girl who slept her way through her mentorship. Despite the fact that I am going to bust my ass, and I truly believe Cole will push me and make sure I leave this job winning. The phone on the desk buzzes, and I snap out of my personal feelings and hurry forward, grabbing the line. Cole Brooks' office, can I help you?
You're not my fucking secretary,
Cole says.
And I don't want anyone thinking you act like my secretary. You answer with your full name.
I don't mind helping.
Do so by acting like you deserve the respect you have earned, and as far as I'm concerned, fighting for your mother and your future without quitting makes you deserve it more than most.
He hits a nerve with those words, and proves that despite my excellent ability to remain unreadable to most, he somehow sees me, and I don't know how I feel about that. He changes the subject.
Can you look in my right-hand drawer and see if I left a file inside?
I reach down and open it. You did.
Of course I did. Can you scan it and email it to me?
Yes, I say. I'll do it right away.
And so you know, it's a personal matter, which makes this a personal favor. I don't care if you see the contents. I'm going to trust you until you give me a reason not to trust you. I hope you can now do the same with me because that matters personally and professionally.
I can, I say. I will, Cole, I...
Didn't know me when you thought I was an asshole. I get it, but you know me now.
His line beeps.
Gotta run. I'll call you later.
He hangs up. I set the receiver down and open the file to find details on the winery he owns in Napa and what looks like a massive disruption deal with a major retailer. He might not like wine, but he obviously does it as well as he does everything else. This isn't a big secret document, but I don't see Cole handing this to any intern or even some random woman he got naked with. And that's his message to me. In his own words, I'm different. He's different. I just have to hope that for now, that makes us a great legal team. I stand up, grab my computer, and connect to the printer in the office. In a few minutes, I've finished the scanning and returned the file to the desk. By the time I'm done, Cole has sent me his email, and I quickly shoot him the document and text him an update. File in your email.
I owe you a bottle of wine that costs more than $40,
he replies. I smile in spite of myself, remembering that night with a warm flush over my skin that has me shaking off the memory and standing up. I exit the office and head to Maria's desk. She ends a call and looks up at me. Yes, Cinderella? I frown. Cinderella? I don't like secrets. I helped file your paperwork for the scholarship program. I know what you've been through, at least what's on paper, which can't begin to reflect the real struggle, I'm certain. Bottom line, though, you've been through hell and this is your Cinderella story. I like it. I already like you. What can I do to help? Thank you for telling me you know, I say, but you can help by not telling anyone else my story. I don't want charity, she supplies. I heard Reese say something like that about you to Cole. But honey, winning that scholarship isn't about charity. It's about being damn good and worth it. And Reese and Cole are both good men. In this shark-infested world, they make this the right place to be. I agree, I say, her words validating the conclusion I came to from the time I left that stairwell with Cole and when I'd shared that with him. I need to hire a secretary for Cole. I need to know he can undo my decision if I make a bad choice. Is there a temp service you recommend? There's one HR uses frequently, she says. I'll call down and get a name. Thank you, I say. And so you know, since I'm reviewing files for Cole, he told me to work in his office. I'll be at his conference table. I heard he's protective of his files, she says. I guess it's true. Heard from who? His ex-assistant, she says. She gave me tips to manage Cole. I laugh. To manage Cole? Honey, an executive assistant at this level either manages her boss or no one gets anything done. Well, teach me to manage him too, please. I joke. She winks. I think you can handle him just fine. Heat rushes to my cheeks with yet another of her little wink moments about me and Cole, and I quickly say, "We shall see," before I turn away and head to my office, where I gather the limited items I have that are my own. By the time I'm walking back into the office, Maria has already found the temp service information. She hands me a name and number. There's a conference room off the lobby you can use for interviews, or just bring them back here. I head back to Cole's office and settle at the conference table, reliving that kiss, when my cell phone rings in my purse. I quickly pull it out to find Kat calling. Hey, Kat. How's it going? Is that you asking or your husband? You know Cole? Yes. Yes? Is that all I'm getting? That's all you're getting, I say. Did you hear that Cole had to go to Houston? No, she says. He just got here. Why? A problem with the current management, but he seemed confident he could handle it. He'll be back for the party, which apparently I need a dress for. Any chance you'd have something I could borrow? Of course, she says, but I'll trade you. Read my newest chapters for any dress you choose. I can't wait to read your newest chapters, so that's a winning deal for me. Saturday morning? She asks. Here? Yes, I say. Perfect. We disconnect, and I grab the number of the temp service and use the company phone to dial out. 30 minutes later, I have 3 interviews lined up, and I move on to the case files. And there is a thrill that shoots through me. I'm really doing this. I'm back. I'm headed toward my goals and dreams, and I love this job. I start reading and I lose track of time. I only stop when I'm forced to find a bathroom and a snack machine, because a pastry and coffee all day isn't cutting it. I'm deep in research on the third of 10 potential cases, typing out notes, when Maria pops her head in the door. You going home soon? I glance at the 5 o'clock hour and then back at her. I'm staying, unless I'm not allowed in the building after hours, I say, considering I have those interviews tomorrow and I'm only on my analysis of case number 3. Honey, you may sleep here during trial prep, she says. If you order food, just alert security. Will do, I say. And no sooner does she depart than my cell phone rings again. I glance at the caller ID to find my mother. Hey, honey, she says when I answer. How has your first day been? It's been an interesting day, I say, because how else do you describe a day when your one-night stand becomes your boss to your mother? I can't wait to hear about it, she says. Are you going to be home before I leave for work? Not tonight, I say. I have tons of work to do. I love hearing you say that. My brow furrows. Hearing what? You are thinking about you and your goals again, not fretting over me. It feels good for me and you. I'm proud of you. I love you. We'll gossip about our jobs this weekend. We disconnect, and I breathe out. She's okay. Everything is finally moving to a better place.
There you are.
I look up to find Reese stepping into the office.
What's got you huddled up in here?
Work, I say. Cole told me to use his office. He laughs.
That doesn't surprise me. He's wicked crazy about privacy, about his case files. You're okay, though?
I'm peachy, I say. He studies me a moment and then nods.
I'll see you tomorrow,
he says. And then he's gone, and I'm alone in Cole's office. This should feel strange. I'm in the office of a man who I slept with, who I feared was the father of my unborn child, who I thought was a man-whore, and now is my boss. I should be worried about my reputation and career. But Cole didn't even tell Reese about us, who I know to be his close friend. I do not believe that Cole would do anything to hurt me, but rather the opposite. If I did, I'd be gone. It's nearly 10 when I walk into my apartment with a slice of cheap corner pizza in a bag. I stick it in the oven, strip down to a sleep shirt, and once I have my computer open on the bed, files beside it, I grab my slice and settle in. I've just finished it off when my cell phone rings with an unknown number. Hello? I answer cautiously.
Lori.
At the sound of Cole's rich, deep voice, I set my empty plate aside. Hi, I say. Did you make it to Houston?
I just got to my hotel room,
he says, sounding weary.
How late did you work?
Are you checking up on me? I ask, feeling a bit defensive.
Easy, sweetheart, he says. I trust you, remember? I was on the internet on the plane. Reese told me, you can take your work home. You know that, right?
I glance at the apartment, the dinginess reminding me of negativity and tears. I liked being at the office. I liked feeling like I was back where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to do.
You like feeling in control again, and the moment I took that from you the night we met was the moment I ensured you'd run.
I didn't run.
No,
he says.
You're right. You walked away with fierce determination. Did you ever regret it?
Yes, I think. But what I say is, I don't think we should talk about this.
Did you regret it?
He presses again, his voice low, gruff. Any answer I give you to that question is the wrong answer when you're my boss.
Spanking you was a mistake. It made you feel like I'd always have the control you were desperately trying to get back.
No, I say, it wasn't a mistake. Cole, you gave me the escape I wanted and, God, I needed. You gave me a chance to let go for just a little while, and somehow you made me feel safe enough to do it with you when I didn't know you. That night was the first time in a year I did anything for myself. It was perfect.
Until morning,
until you left.
You know my situation, and that morning I was working 4 jobs, 3 part-time and 1 full-time, with no idea when I'd go back to school. If I had stayed, you would have thought that I found out you had money and I wanted some kind of sugar daddy. Don't tell me you wouldn't have.
That's why you left?
Part of the reason?
I wouldn't have thought that,
he says firmly.
Not with you.
You say that now, but I'm not in the same place I was then.
I'll tell you again when I see you and make you believe it.
No, I say quickly, sitting back up. We need to talk about this now and then set it aside.
Is that a rule?
Yes, a rule. And speaking of rules...
Don't make them yet.
He warns.
Not when I promised to follow those rules and I always keep my promises. Don't box me or us in yet. Not over the phone.
Now on the phone is safer.
But not better.
He says,
we need closure that won't give us. We need to talk, and we need to do it in person, away from the office. You know we do.
Cole, I whisper, shutting my eyes, wanting that talk, but knowing it can't happen.
Ah, sweetheart,
he says softly.
I do really love hearing you say my name again. Get some rest. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
He hangs up. Chapter 22. Lori. I fall asleep thinking about the kiss I'd shared with Cole in his office, and I wake up to a text message from him that reads,
I finally figured out what you smelled like the night I met you. Honeysuckle and coffee. No wonder I've doubled my caffeine intake since meeting you. I wanted more.
I inhale and let it out with the realization that he really has been thinking about me in the past and the present. Even more so, he's been contemplating how I smell in a sexy, want-more kind of way. I decide the safest way to answer is with a business-like explanation, and so I reply with, one of my part-time jobs was at a coffee shop. As if that reply somehow deflates the reason he knows how I smell or changes what more means. He calls immediately, and when I answer, he says,
Look, sweetheart, I'm in a car about to arrive at the office, and after that I'm going dark for a while, but I think you need to hear what I was thinking about you last night. Do you remember when I told you that you're different?
How can I not? I think. I was on a sidewalk, pressed against a wall, with his big, perfect body close, but yet not close enough. I remember.
I read people, too,
he says,
and I know now why I said those words to you that day. I sensed the depth of your character. I sensed the struggles and the fight. It's what makes you special. Every job and every struggle you've had will make you a better attorney. Remember that. You aren't behind anymore. You're 2 steps ahead.
The dogmatic intensity of his words and the unexpected shift from bedroom to boardroom takes me off guard, but I recover with sincere appreciation and concern. Thank you, Cole, I say. That means a lot to me, but please do not feel that you have to...
Coddle you,
he supplies. Exactly. I don't want you to feel like I'm a delicate flower.
You are most definitely not a delicate flower, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm simply telling you what I think as both a man and your boss. As a man, it's part of why I can't stop thinking about you. As your boss, it's fuel for your job. Think beyond the file and the person you're dealing with, the way you did when you sized me up, but go deeper. Use what you have learned through your struggles to win.
I will, I say. And now I'm dogmatic. I am.
Good,
he says.
And just so we're clear, none of this means that I'm going to make this journey easy on you or you on me. But that's okay. I don't mind working hard for what I want, and I don't believe you do either. I gotta go and kick some ass. More soon.
He disconnects, leaving me to linger on the words. I don't mind working hard for what I want. He wants me. That is clear, and I want him too, but there are 2 problems with a man like Cole Brooks that I can't forget. 1, he consumes you until there is nothing left, and 2, You want him to consume you anyway, no matter what that means or how that ends. We need those rules. No, I need those rules. 45 minutes later, I exit my bedroom, dressed in one of the only 3 suits I have to change up with different blouses and shoes. This one black, like my strappy heels, while my blouse is an emerald green. I find my mother still in scrubs in the kitchen. I set my briefcase and purse on the table, and she offers me a cup of coffee. "Tell me everything," she says, as I accept the cup she's personally doctored my way and rest an elbow on the counter. "How did you know I was about to be out here?" "I have you timed. Alarm, shower, exit, 45 minutes. I laugh. "I guess you do, but there's not much to tell yet," I say, sipping the warm beverage. Aside from the fact that my boss is struggling with some of the merger aftermath, he had to go to Houston, so I'm extra busy taking care of things for him today. "Is that Reese?" "No," I say, leaning on the cabinet opposite her. "His partner, Cole." "Oh, right," she says. "What's he like?" "Arrogant, good-looking, and brilliant." She gives me a curious look. "Is that good or bad?" "Good and bad," I say, being as honest as I feel I can without worrying her, which is why I change the subject. "What's up with your architect?" She cuts her eyes and then drinks from her cup. "What is it, Mom?" I ask. "Did something go wrong?" She gives a bitter laugh and shoves a lock of her freshly colored hair behind her ear. "I saw him with some other woman at a coffee shop," she says with a sigh. "I have no right to be upset. We've just met, but it felt like there was a connection." I've recently been reminded that assuming really does backfire, I say, thinking, of course, of Cole. "If you like him, don't shut him out without knowing for sure." "I'm really not sure I'm ready to date anyway." "You're beautiful and free," I say. "Of course you want a date. You've lit up over this man, and while no man should be the only reason you light up, there's nothing wrong with them playing a part in your happiness." "I feel guilty." She tears up and sets her cup down. "I really do. And honestly, honey, I also feel angry at your father for leaving us in this hell. He's why you left school. He's why we're here." I set my cup down. "I know he is," I say, "and I'm angry at him too, but we're a team and we've made it. Don't feel guilty. You don't deserve that torment. He's gone and you deserve to live. And I hate this, but I have to get to work." "I don't," she says. "I'm back to work and you're finally living your dream. We did get through this, or we're getting through it. And we're going to get out of here," I say, walking to the table to grab my briefcase. "I got the scholarship paperwork. With my monthly benefits, we'll be out of here in 6 months." "I'm fine here," she says. "I'm not worried about me. I've made friends here. I want you out of here." "We leave together," I say. "That's non-negotiable." I hug her. "I love you." "I love you too, honey." I kiss her temple. "I'll see you later." I head to the door, feeling hopeful and thankful, reminded that my mother loved my father and he loved her, but he was no fairy tale Prince Charming. This job is my chance at my self-created Cinderella story. Had my mother created her own, had she retained control, my father couldn't have left us in the devastating mess we've endured. I can't lose sight of that, no matter how tempting and sexy the boss fantasy might be. And the truth is, it is. Cole is. After a busy subway ride, I arrive at work and quickly surmise that Reese is in court and Maria is crazy busy preparing emergency documents he needs for some other case. The day is fast-paced and pure insanity. I interview 2 candidates for Cole's secretary by noon with no success. I eat lunch at Cole's conference table, wishing I knew how Houston was going for him. My 2 o'clock interview is also a bust. 3 candidates for Cole, and I choose none of them. I hate them all. At 3 o'clock, I'm out of time. "What do I do, Maria? He needs someone here Monday morning." Her brilliant advice that isn't brilliant at all is, bring the best of them in, and hope for the best. I reject that idea and head back to Cole's office, where I call the temp service. I end the call with 3 interviews lined up for Monday morning. I disconnect the call and resist my urge to call Cole, or at least text him for an update. It's my 2nd day. I don't have a right to be asking for updates on Houston. Instead, I get to work on the rest of my to-do list, memorizing attendees of the party and analyzing cases that all feel wrong for Cole. I exchange calls with my mother, say goodnight to Maria, and somehow it's 9 o'clock, and there is nothing from Cole. I'm back on my bed working, with a salad this time, when my cell phone rings, and it's him. "Hey," I answer.
"Hey, sweetheart,"
he says, and his voice is too weary for me to object to the sweetheart. I'd like it if it wasn't highly inappropriate, if I was ready to live the boss fantasy, but I'm not.
"It's been a hell of a day," he adds, "but I'm finally on a plane about to take off."
"Did it work out?"
"It did," he says, "but I had to climb mountains and hang from a few cliffs. The problem with Houston is there's a lot of my father's narrow view left behind."
"You took over for your father?"
"I was voted into control when he died, but together he and I had controlling interest anyway."
"That sounds concerning," I say. "If that mentality still exists, won't this problem happen again?"
"Not if I'm there a couple times a month, which at this point is a necessity. Reese and I are meeting in the morning to plan pulling as much of the Houston branch into New York as we can. Did you find me a secretary?"
"Yes. Me. I hated all of the candidates. I have 3 more coming in Monday, but I just couldn't stick the wrong person in that role."
"Now you know why I don't have a secretary. My assistant couldn't find a replacement, and neither could I."
"Well, I hate to tell you this," I say, "but I'm failing on all fronts. I've got case files all over my bed right now, and I've been digging through them for 2 days. None feel like something worthy of you. They just don't feel like you." The engine roars in the background.
"I have to hang up, and just when this was going to get interesting. I was going to ask you what feels like me. Get some rest. And Lori?"
"Yes?"
"I wouldn't take any of those cases. I already looked at them. I'll see you tomorrow."
He hangs up. I'd call him an asshole for testing me like that, only he's my mentor and teacher, so it's his job to test me. As to how I'd answer that question, what does Cole feel like? Trouble. The kind prosecutors he opposes hate. The kind that makes me want to do everything I've already done with him and add a few extras. Like lick every inch of his body, just once. "Yep," I think. "He's trouble, and considering the fact that I just had the I'm my own Cinderella story talk with myself this very morning, and I'm already contemplating where to lick him again, I'm in trouble. Especially since no is always easier on the phone, which, of course, is why he waited to negotiate rules in person. And if I'm honest with myself, he knows and I know I didn't object. That's as good as giving a man like Cole Brooks a ticket that reads, "No rules, please spank me again, and make it all better." Chapter 23. Lori. I'm up early Saturday morning, showered and dressed in my favorite black sweats and pink tee, files in my briefcase, and gone before my mother ends an overtime shift. I arrive at Kat and Reese's place at 9, and Kat greets me in the same uniform I'm wearing. Black sweats, a tee, and her blonde hair piled on top of her head. "It sucks," she says. "I need no clarification. Your books never suck," I assure her, following her inside and shutting the door. "There is always a first sucky book," she says as we head further into the apartment and cut right toward the main living area. "Times like these make me want to join you all at the firm." She disappears around the corner. I laugh. "You're talking crazy talk now." I follow her into the kitchen and stop dead in my tracks when I discover Reese and, yes, Cole, leaning on the far cabinet, side by side, both in sweats and t-shirts, both holding coffee cups. but it's Cole that I'm aware of most, and in the moment that our eyes meet, I swear I feel his hands and lips on my body all over again, and he steals my breath. Even the phone calls we've shared now feel more intimate. I force myself to move toward the island, and I don't have to hold Cole's stare to know that he's tracking my every step. I am so aware of this man that my nipples actually tighten with nothing more than him being here, this close to me, and we are not even alone. I settle my briefcase and purse on a bar stool. Kat is about to sit down when Reese catches her shoulders and pulls her back against him. "Relax, sweetheart," Reese murmurs near her ear. The sweetheart, another little tidbit to remind me of that intimacy between Cole and I that shouldn't exist, but does. I claim a bar stool and I don't mean to, but my eyes meet Cole's again.
"Morning, Lori," he says.
And he makes Lori sound all sultry and rich. The hint of a smile on his brutally delicious lips speaks of a secret, our secret. "Morning," I say, and then add, "Boss?" If I think this will dissuade Cole from being Cole, which I have certainly learned means bold and sharp-witted, I am wrong.
"I am," he says, "aren't I?"
"Don't worry, Lori," Kat says, twisting around to kiss Reese before claiming her bar stool. They're going running like they used to back in the day, apparently. She glances over her shoulder at Cole. "And your boss promised not to hijack you today, probably because he doesn't know how good you are yet."
"I'm simply trying to stop your meltdown,"
Cole comments, his eyes finding mine again.
"I told her that I needed you today," he adds, "and that the ever unbreakable, cool, calm Kat
did not melt down," Kat says. "Stop saying that."
"She melted down,"
Reese chimes in.
"She's convinced the book is a disaster."
"Well, it's not," I say. "I've read most of the book. It's brilliant, but with every successful endeavor, she puts more and more pressure on herself to stay on top." Reese and Cole look at each other and give a little nod of understanding and agreement that Kat can't see, but I do. It's a very human moment for the two superstar legal powerhouses, and the fact that they were willing to make this acknowledgement in front of me stirs the sense of belonging in me I've always felt with Kat and Reese. And now there is Cole. I pull out my MacBook and focus on Kat, who everyone in this room seems to believe needs me right now, and being needed feels as good as belonging. "Send me what I haven't read." "Don't you want coffee?" she asks. "You don't do anything without coffee." "You're stalling," I reprimand, because A, she is, and B, she's right, but Cole is standing by the pot, and Reese and Kat are too smart and aware to not feel the charge between us that I don't need to turn into a flame. "You don't function without two cups of coffee." God, the woman knows me. I'm one cup in already. It's out before I can stop it, and I quickly scoot off my stool and walk toward Cole. I deflect back to Kat. "But I'll make cup number two if I return to my computer with a manuscript to read." "You'll have a manuscript when they leave," she says. They're overwhelmingly them, and it's making me crazy. I laugh at that, understanding completely. These two men take up a lot of space in all kinds of ways. Kat then says, "How's your mother?" There it is, that personal part of my life that Cole is slowly sliding inside. "Still good," I say, stopping next to him and grabbing a cup from the cabinet, my arm brushing his in the process, heat jolting up my arm, and without intending to, I look up at him. "Sorry," I murmur, when I'm not, but it's necessary that I responded as if I am.
"Don't be,"
he says, his eyes finding mine.
"We're all good here."
We're all good here. I know what it means, but it's generic. Easygoing. I cut my attention to the task at hand and stick a pod in the Keurig. "Any gossip on the man she's seeing?" Kat asks, pulling my attention back to her. I consider my reply and the fact that I'm now headed into territory that is personal to Cole and I, but it's also unfinished business that feels like it needs to be finished. "Actually, yes," I say, rotating to lean on the cabinet next to Cole, to find Kat turned in this direction. She saw him with another woman in a coffee shop, and she's convinced he's a man-whore. I choose the word man-whore precisely because it's what I've called Cole in the past. Oh, no, Kat says. Oh, no, she deserved a Prince Charming after all she has gone through. I want her to find a Prince